This is Mary Lewis at A Tiny Homestead, the podcast comprised entirely of conversations with homesteaders, cottage food producers, and crafters. Today I'm talking with Tia and Gabriel at Half a Barn Farm. Good afternoon, Gabriel and Tia. How are you?
We're good.
Yeah, doing well.
Good. Tell me all about you and Half a Barn Farm.
Oh, that's a long story.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's okay.
Let's start a little bit about what we do now, and we can go back to where we started.
Okay.
So currently, we're a 1.7-acre microfarm just outside of Raleigh, and we subsistence farm for ourselves, and we help people to grow and raise food where they live. So primarily, that exists inside the scope of raised garden beds, chicken coops, rainwater collection, compost systems. That's the entry point for most people, but we'll do all the way up through teaching you how to raise your own protein and humanely process it for yourself in your own backyard.
Yep.
Very nice. Okay. So tell me how it started. Tell me the long story.
All right. Well, long story is, we're both from Maine.
Me too.
Are you really?
Yep. Yeah, Steep Falls, Maine.
Okay.
No doubt.
I grew up in Waterville.
Prospect.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So we started on 0.28 acres in Maine. Mm-hmm. And we started with a pretty good-sized garden and some chickens. And then we ended up moving to North Carolina and kind of kept up with it, right?
About 15 years ago, we moved into our first house. There were garden beds there. I had no personal experience growing. Gabe had some with his family, but that was our gateway, our entry point into growing and raising our own food.
And how we ended up going into business was about a year ago. We were planning on moving out of the Raleigh area. We're planning on leaving. We're going to take the equity that we have in our home that's about 20 minutes from downtown and head to Kathmandu. We were going to go to the middle of nowhere and try to pay cash for something that was, 30, 40 acres with a house that nobody liked and, and just subsistence farm for ourselves. And that was going to be our life. And we went to a meet that was put together by
Farm Where You Live convention.
So Farm Where You Live, if you're familiar with those guys, they're great. If you're not, look them up. They're fantastic. Mm-hmm. But my one of our personal heroes, Joel Salatin, was going to be speaking there. So I was really pumped to go and meet him for the first time and hear him give a talk. And I was expecting him to give us a talk about regenerative farming, some sort of new awesome practice that he was doing there at Polyface. And what I actually got was an hour-long lecture on ethics and truth. And here we were planning on just leaving, everybody in this area, right? This dense urban area, right? High and dry, still not knowing how to do anything, still having to rely on the current food system that is just precariously balanced on the edge of a razor, right? And yep. We were just going to, head to the hills, right? And do our own thing. Now, about a year earlier, we had had the idea for helping people to grow and raise their own food. And I did a little bit of market research and we immediately dismissed it as stupid because we couldn't find anybody remotely within driving distance that did anything that was even close to this. And furthermore, I found a couple of businesses that were now defunct, right? There was a couple that did not exist anymore. Mm-hmm. So we determined that was probably a stupid idea and that we weren't going to pursue it. But then after hearing Joel speak, I felt personally really convicted and I hadn't even talked to Tia about it yet. And then, she apparently was feeling the same way. So later that night we were, sitting around the campfire, at the campground near Asheville. And neither one of us know who brought the idea up again. But we just started talking about it and Tia, cause she's smarter than me and takes dutiful notes said, hey, why don't we press this idea up against Joel's 10 pillars of truth, right? See if it's actually a good idea. Does old Uncle Joel think it's a good idea, right?
Uh-huh,
yeah. And then we did. And sure enough, it checked every single box. So then we had a decision to make. We either move, right, or take on this new business that may very well blow up in our face, right, and the bank takes our house. So we reached out to our mortgage broker to say, hey, you know how you've been doing all this work for us to see about us purchasing someplace out of state? And she was like, yeah. I was like, well, we got this cockamamie idea about this silly business, and this is what we're looking at doing. What do you think about that? And she goes, I think it's brilliant. Can I be your first client? Well, nice. I guess you're not helping us buy a new house because we have to stay here. Because if we move to the middle of nowhere, there's no one to help, right? We're in the middle of nowhere. We can't help anybody out there. So here we are. And we actually spent all day long today in people's backyards offering them consultations about what they can grow, how they can grow it, and bidding work to build infrastructure for people. And I'm pretty sure we're going to get hired by 3/4 of the people that we saw today. So
that is such a great story. I'm so glad I reached out to talk to you guys. That's fantastic. Yeah. I wish you had done this, I don't know, 22 years ago when we were on a 10th of an acre lot in Jordan, Minnesota, just starting our stuff, because it would have been nice to have someone who knew what we needed to do. We figured it out, but you're giving me an idea for us. This is a great idea.
People need it. So a lot of what we're doing in this business, in this venture, is not just about putting in gardens and helping people to raise backyard chickens. Mm-hmm. It's mindset changing. So many people want to wait until they have a bigger house or a better house or a different neighborhood or more land or more time or more this or more that.
Right.
And we're just trying to encourage everyone on a regular basis, just start now. Start now. Even if you don't have those things that you wish to have someday, you have to start somewhere. And why not start today and start small with the basics?
Yeah, I refer to that as do what you can with what you have where you are.
Yes.
And so, that's what we did.
Yeah, and that's where a lot of people have to start. So we, as part of our business model, we go to farmers markets and we talk to people there to win business. So we're not well known enough yet to just have the phone ringing all the time. And so we go and we talk to people at farmers markets because those people already have us different mindset already about food and how to procure food in a shorter supply chain and all of that. So that's a great place for us to find people who are ready to start growing and raising food. Mm-hmm. But even then, there's still a lot of people who are like, no, I just want to buy it, or I don't have enough space. And I would say 2 out of the 5 yards, backyards we were in today, people were like, I had no idea that I could do this in this spot. Like, that didn't even cross my mind once. So we're helping people to see potential where they don't think potential already exists.
So you're dream builders is what you are.
Well, we're just helping people to see things, right? Like, we happen to be, we're outside the box people, right? Yeah. Sort of a lot in a lot of different ways, but we have a difficult time with the word no or can't, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah. When we were living on 0.28 acres that also had our house on it, and we looked at the covenants of our area where we were, and it said that we couldn't have chickens. I took that very personally and then immediately built a chicken coop inside my shed and then a run off the backside of my shed and asked no one permission. Like, I just did it, right? Now, I did give my neighbors a heads up and say, hey, I'm planning on doing this. Is this going to ruin your life? Like, is this going to bother you? And my neighbor directly behind me She was a lovely old woman. How old was Helga? Hilda.
Like 90.
Yeah. She was very
still
old.
Her own lawn.
Yeah. I offered to do her yard work, and you would have thought that I offered to burn her house down. Like, she was so upset with me because I thought that maybe she couldn't do it. And I'm over here just being like, I hate seeing you mow your own lawn. It ruins my life. Anyway, she would just sit in the backyard and watch chickens do chicken stuff. And it made her so happy. There's a lot of people down here that would like to have backyard birds and would like to have gardens, and they have bought into a couple of misconceptions, right? One is that it takes an awful lot of time to do any of these things. And of course, everybody's really busy, right? Everybody's super busy. So where will I find the time to do this? And they don't realize that growing a garden is busy only a couple of times a year, right? It's busy when you plant, it's busy when you pick. Right. It's busy. It's not busy the rest of the time, especially if you have good infrastructure and good soil. Like, it's just not busy the rest of the time. You spend time out in the garden because, it's beautiful out there and it's good for you and you want to, right. And while you're out there, you might as well turn over the leaves to make sure you don't have a nest of, squash bug eggs that you just dutifully mush with your thumb and move on with your life. Right. Like, it's, and then chickens. I'm going to be meeting with various HOAs over the course of this year to dispel all the nonsense around backyard chickens and why, you know, they're actually not loud and why it's not a problem, right? Why it's not going to be a smelly, awful mess. Because your backyard birds are way quieter than the neighborhood dogs, way quieter than the neighborhood dogs. And it doesn't have to be a smelly mess, provided you have the appropriate infrastructure and you're not overburdening your area, right? Like, if you have 65 birds in a 25 square foot area, yeah, it's going to be a nightmare. That's going to be awful for everybody, uh-huh. Right?
Yeah.
But most of these towns, like, they do have ordinances around the number of birds that you can have, right? You can have 5, you can have 10. They don't want you to have roosters. You know, relatively reasonable, especially from, you know, a suburban type setting, right, where the houses are stacked on top of each other. There's no reason why every house, every other house couldn't have a half a dozen chickens behind it. It, you know, no problem whatsoever. And then you wouldn't need the awful, dirty industrial egg industry, right? They just wouldn't have to exist.
Yeah. And we have chickens. And the thing I love about chickens is that they mutter to each other. Like, yeah. they quietly cluck to each other, except when they're laying an egg. If they're laying an egg, they do the what noise and yeah. They lay an egg. And for us, it's usually between like 9:30 in the morning and noon. So yeah.
People are at work.
I don't know if all chickens lay between 9:30 and noon, but 9:30, I'm assuming that most people are up. And most people who work nights and are sleeping during the day, they're so tired, they're not going to hear a chicken make a noise. So,
well, that too. But I mean, the neighborhood dogs, like, we were in a neighborhood the other day that has a strict no chickens policy. And the woman that we were building a garden for, she's like, I guess I'm going to have to join the HOA so I can make changes. We were talking her through it. But we were sitting there building in her backyard, and there was 3 different sets of dogs all around us.
Losing their mind.
Yeah.
The whole time.
And I was like, yeah, you would never be able to hear chickens over all this noise.
No.
So.
No, I actually love listening to the chickens talk to each other because they sound like they're having conversations. They really
and
do.
They congratulate each other when they lay eggs too. Mm-hmm. Right? Like
sounds like it, yes.
Yeah. The one chicken will lay the egg and the other one. Like, you go, girl. We mm-hmm. created life.
Yep, exactly. And as for dogs barking, I mean, we lived in town, in a small town, up until 3.5 years ago. And we didn't have a dog, but we knew every single dog in the area because we knew who they were. And it got loud a lot of the time. And then we moved here. And like a quarter to a half a mile behind our house, there's a doggy daycare. And we can hear them barking in the morning when they show up, and we can hear them barking when the owners come to get them. But other than that, we don't hear anything. So I think it's all a matter of what you're willing to put up with versus what you want.
Sure. And I think a lot of people are just misinformed in general about the nature of like chickens, because a lot of modern ideas about food and farming are not the small backyard farm. It's about the big industrial farm, right. And they smell bad because you can smell them from the road as you drive by.
Yes.
That's what people's experience is. Mm. And that's what we're trying to help people to have true realistic expectations about what is possible in their space, but also help them to do it in a humane and healthy way for them and for their animals.
I think what you're doing is fantastic. I do have one specific question for you, and it has to do with raised beds, because I was looking at your Facebook page, and sure. It looks like you guys put in raised beds for people.
We do.
We do.
What is the benefit to raised beds versus just planting in the ground? Because we do raised beds for our potatoes so that we can add dirt as the plants grow. But other than that, we plant in our big 90 by 110 garden in the ground.
Yeah. So, which is great. So we're not like raised bed snobs.
Okay.
We have in North Carolina a lot of Georgia red clay.
Okay.
And there are so many neighborhoods here that are just being raised to the ground. So there's all the trees and everything. It's raised to the ground right down to the clay. And then they build these neighborhoods. There's no trees and they're rolling out sod and people don't have a foundation for growing it.
So
there's no soil.
There's no soil. So you can amend the clay and you can bring in the amendments and you can start doing the work of actually creating a foundation. But that takes time. So we're talking a minimum of 18 months before you can really grow well in the ground. So what we're doing is kind of a permaculture-esque concept where we're bringing in the garden beds, we're putting the good compost right on top. But what it does is when you don't put any weed barrier, when you don't create barriers between the bed and the soil below it, it actually starts to amend the soil that it's sitting on top of. So in 10 years, when the beds break down, if you want to just pull out the beds and rake out the soil, instead of having just 12 inches of soil, that's good. You're going to have 18. And so you actually have like, you've done the work of amending your soil area over the long term.
Without having to till it all up and do all that. So it's a way to get growing in a controlled manner right now that gives you the greatest opportunity for success. And a lot of these people that we're dealing with and helping, they're absolute beginners, right? So you start with perfect soil in a controlled environment. And then in 8-10 years, when this stuff is broken down and they're better at it, now you rip the wood out and you can row crop the entire area that you had designated as garden now.
Yeah. And one of the other things too, is that because of so I don't know if you're aware, but Raleigh has the second largest housing market currently in the country, with Durham, our next neighboring city, is number 4. So there's so much growth here right now. There's a constant steady drip of buildings and houses and stuff going up all the time. So a lot of that actually overwhelms the land and the soil. And so there's a lot of sitting top water oftentimes, or there's not a whole lot of good drainage. Plus we get torrential downpours here, and there's a lot of different pitched, you know, backyards or front yards or whatever. So the garden boxes, you know, if you're going to go through all the trouble of putting in that work and getting that soil and putting your food in it, you don't want to have it erode. So it's kind of like containing what your investment is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I didn't even think about the clay. Because we've been so focused on getting our place set up the way we want it to be. And we don't live in the river valley, but we live just above where the river valley is. We have really good black dirt. So clay wouldn't have popped into my head. Sorry about that.
No.
And most people, even people that live here, still don't understand why we do it. So we are blessed to live on older farmland. It has been heavily farmed, and we're working to regenerate our own soil. We're doing that with animals. But we have like 3 feet before we hit clay. Most people have an inch of soil and then they hit clay, and some people don't even have that.
Wow.
It's literally like carpet over the top of stuff that's just super duper dead.
And we're talking a lot of like manicured grass lawns versus natural stuff. So again, we're trying to work within what people have going.
It's almost all Bermuda grass sod. Yeah. Almost all of it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. So there's not a whole lot of natural stuff. So we're trying to give them the entry point as soon as possible, but give them the tools and to be able to go long term and be able to turn this into a forever garden if they wish.
I absolutely love what you guys are doing. I'm sitting here, my heart's big, because I know it's a business and I know that you guys need to make it work and make money, but you're doing a good thing to make money. Does that make sense?
We're trying.
Yeah, we're trying. So we're passionate about this. I mean, for many reasons, but this is what people used to do. And we live in a world that has been affected by, COVID and just other things. We're in a time that has major amounts of mental health disorders and depression and all this stuff. And not enough people are outside and they're not in dirt and they're not, experiencing these things that are actually really good for your health, not just because you're eating better vegetables that are more nutrient dense, but the actual act of sticking your hands in soil grounds you and can lower your blood pressure and does something for your overall mental health that, a lot of people aren't getting anymore. So.
Yeah, one of my favorite scents in the world is fresh turned black dirt.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It
just makes me happy.
Last week we were in the backyard of someone, and we had just come from installing a small garden somewhere, and I had purchased entirely too much compost for that build intentionally because we're building more garden at our own home, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like we're just going to mound the trailer every time and deal with it after the fact. But when we were talking with them in their backyard and talking to them about the soil that they had in these kind of failed little kit garden beds that they had, I was like, well, the reason you're not getting anything to grow real good is that your soil's real bad. And she's like, should I get it tested? And I was like, you don't have to test it. I can explain, I can show you the difference between good and bad right now. Let's take a walk over to the truck and the trailer. And it just totally blew their mind. They're like, oh, this smells great. It smells sweet and like it's alive, right? And when they grabbed a handful of it, I was like, do you feel how warm that is? They're like, yes. Why is it so warm? Like, because it's alive. It's got so much microbiome going on in here, right? It's like it's a bustling metropolis of bacteria and microbes. And that's what makes your food good. That is. And she was like, I had no idea. So. We're more than likely building a garden for those people too.
Good. Yeah. Good. Okay. So I don't know how you guys go about this. If you get hold of someone or someone gets hold of you and says, could you come help me grow things in my yard? Do you give them like a personalized, customized quote, or how does it work? And I don't want specific numbers because that's not going to matter.
Yeah. So what we do is whenever we're talking with people, we don't ever want to just quote and say, yeah, we'll build you this garden bed and deliver X, Y, and Z day. Because anyone can do that. What we want to do is we want to go into someone's backyard first. So we set up a consultation for an hour. We go and see their space, talk to them about their goals, and we help them to also look in long term and cast some vision. Like, I understand what your immediate goals are, but if you could do all of the things, what would that look like? And then we also asked them, are you planning on doing any patio work or doing a pool or any of this other stuff? Because if you want to put your pool in the perfect garden place, we have to have that conversation. So yeah. We go out and spend an hour with them. We talk to them about their goals. We look at their soil. We look at their sunlight. We look at just all of the things. We talk to them
about the topography and shade and all that.
Zoning. And then we tell them and propose to them how we would do things if we lived there. And we hear back from them and their input. But basically, we try to come up with a plan. And if they decide that they want to build, if it's a simple, basic plan, we can quote them on site. We send them a proposal and they decide if they want to build or not. Some people we have to do some bigger planning for.
Design work and such.
There's one build that we have right now that's a very large build. Involves existing garden beds being moved, new ones being built, fence being installed, and a greenhouse. So that required some actual time on the computer, you know, building a plan and whatnot for them. And so and that's how it works. So sometimes we can build a garden in an afternoon, and sometimes it's going to take a week. But the goal is to get it done as soon as possible.
Yeah. Figuring out what it is that they, like where they're, we want to know where their comfort zone is, right? We want to know why it's there. And then sometimes we want to also challenge that. They're like, okay, so why do you think that you can only handle two garden beds? Because two garden beds or six garden beds is still a small garden. Like, we're not talking about changing your entire life to now I'm a full-time farmer. It's like, why only two? Because you can only grow so much food in two garden beds. You're probably not going to feel like it was worth the effort, right? Like you're just not, because it's not enough real estate. We do six garden beds. Now you're able to harvest significant amounts of food multiple times a week, right? To where you're really actually eating from your backyard. And there's a lot of mindset talk around it, right? Like, and making sure people understand what their money's going to really get them, right?
And also, people don't understand. So we came from Maine. We had to learn this all over. But there are three full growing seasons here in North Carolina. And if you do it properly, you can grow year round outside. So I start putting stuff in the ground in February, and that's all cold weather. And then I plant again in April, my summer garden. And then in August, I'm planting my fall garden. So if you only have a garden bed, you really have almost none, because you'll have to either plant so little that you don't take up room for other stuff, or you'll be pulling stuff ahead of time. So I always say that two here is one, and four is really ideal place to start at as a beginner.
Yeah. And if you're trying to educate beginners, you kind of have to do it the way you're doing it, because they don't know what they don't know. You know what right. They don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
And they get to live vicariously, from the dumb things that we've done, right? Like all the ways that we've failed growing things here in North Carolina, they don't have to.
Yeah. And so part of what we do too is we go and do the consultation. We build them this garden. We don't leave it there. If they want, they can hire us for specialized backyard education, where we come out and we will handhold them through the different seasons, through planting, through how to train and prune and thin and, you know, do all that stuff, and harvesting as well. Mm-hmm. So we're not leaving people high and dry. They can come to the farm and take a class, but we prefer to actually really just get to people's backyards and give them the specialized education for the things that they want to grow and that the space that they have.
Okay, when did you guys start doing this particular part of helping people do what you're talking about?
Professionally, 11 months ago. Okay. Anecdotally, like 5 years ago. Yeah. So the reason we decided to do it as a business is that when you give someone something, it doesn't get the same amount of respect as if they have earned it or paid for it. So there were more than one time where someone would express interest to myself or my wife about growing and raising their own food. And then we would give of ourselves, right, hours and hours, right, of here's a design, here's this, here's that, right? And, you know, lean on us for anything that you need, da, da, da. And then we see them 2 months later and say, hey, how's the garden going? How are the chickens? How are the whatever? And they would say, oh, yeah, we, you know, life, and I haven't done anything. Oh, really glad that we paused on our life for you to draw up an entire planting diagram for you and, you know, and what your backyard ought to look like and where you ought to put your things, and sent you all those links and, yeah, and didn't do anything. So now we charge people for it, and they do things. It's miraculous.
I'm really weird how that works. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like being fit, right? Like all the information on how to be fit exists, right? That's simple. But most people don't start actually changing their habits until they've paid the personal trainer $120 a month, and they have the $80 a month gym membership, and they're, you know, have a meal plan and all this different stuff, right, that they're all paying for, because they would feel completely ridiculous to be spending $450 a month and getting no results, right? Mm-hmm. So they're actually doing the thing now. So in order to get people to actually do the thing, we got to charge them for it.
There needs to be some kind of buy-in.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. And you could also use the word accountability too.
Sure.
So, but anyway, I love what you guys are doing. And we had to figure it out on our own when we started doing the backyard garden and chicken thing. And kind of glad that we did, because it was really fun. And I think that's the other thing that we should mention here, is that this is a really fun process too. When you start changing the way that your yard is, when you start changing the way that you live, there's real excitement and real joy in that.
Yes. We've often had people be like, oh, guys, this is a lot of work. And I'm like, it's such good work. I would rather do this than pretty much anything else. So
it reminds me of marriage. Marriage is hard work, but it's good work.
Yes. Amen.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I don't want to tie you guys up too long, because I know you have a lot to do. You spent the day doing things. So, but thank you for sharing your story, because please keep doing what you're doing. You are saving a little piece of the world at a time.
Well, we appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, we're trying. We're trying real hard. And I appreciate you reaching out. Every startup has the same problem, right? And it's that not enough people on the planet know that they exist, right? So I appreciate you allowing us to come on your platform and share. You mind if I plug where people can find us?
You can plug it out loud on the recording, and I'm also going to link in the description for the podcast when I release
Fantastic.
It. But go ahead.
Yeah. So you can find us on about every flavor of social media. Half a Barn Farm, both Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. You can find us at halfabarnfarm.com as well.
Okay. And I'm super stupid. I was going to ask you where the name came from. Where did Half a Barn come from?
So when we moved here, we're only the second owners of this house. It's a 1970 brick ranch. And in the backyard, there's a structure. Some might call it a garage, but it's not a garage. It's not fully enclosed. So if you look at it from the front, it looks like there's half of what the structure is that's walled in. So we started calling it the barn, the half barn, then the half a barn. And then when we're like, okay, we actually have a legitimate farm and needs a name, it became the Half a Barn Farm.
That's awesome. I meant to ask you at the beginning and I completely forgot. So...
Yes. So yeah, our name farm, like our farm logo and our name doesn't really tell you what we do, but it is who we are. So that's why it is what it is.
Yeah.
I love it. All right, you guys have a great evening, and thanks again.
Thank you.
Have a good one.
Bye.